all the James Bond movies are on Netflix right now till like September.
I have most of them on Blu-ray.
See, I don't. And I
watch on her watch the them best James Bond movie on Her Majesty's Secret Service. The George Lazenby
is that like the really silly one?
Well, they're all pretty silly. Yeah. But it's the George Lazenby one, the one that Sean Connery, and then Sean Connery comes back.
Is this your favorite, Ryan?
Yeah,
it's so good. Hey,
yeah.
I only have three books.
Really?
Holy shit. I only have four.
What was your favorite book?
Well, we don't want to say that until the end of the show. You haven't read it anyway.
Is
that? Are we recording right now?
Of course. We have a patter.
Bitter patter?
Well, that's why. Okay.
I don't like to tell you guys, so we get all kinds of candid things.
Oh, my hemorrhoids is bursting.
Your hemorrhoids is bursting.
Bursting with flavor or? I wish I hadn't said that now. It's
the first time in. To my knowledge, in this podcast, too far. too far.
I finally did it. Well, welcome to the Geek Stampede Comics Roundup for the week of Wednesday, August the 21st, 2013.
The quickest we've gotten to the intro.
I agree. Like, and this week I'm going to remember to introduce ourselves. I am Joey G, and across the table and slightly to the right is Robbie G.
Hello.
And Ryan Heff.
I'm not introducing myself.
Can you talk quieter so the
mic? You don't have to introduce yourself. You just fucking introduced you.
Bring your microphone closer to you, boys.
I'm a man, right?
Shut up.
Man and boy.
I'm 25 years old.
So right off the top, let's get to the. We might as well cover the big comics news.
The meat.
The big news.
The meat.
You guys hear the big news?
The meat.
They cast Batman in the new movie, in the sequel to Man of Shit.
And it's George Lazenby.
George Lazenby is.
I would watch that movie.
This like old Australian guy.
Mm-hmm.
But actor they cast is slightly younger than Lazenby, though not by much. And I'm actually pretty excited because I really like this actor. It's Ben Affleck, y'all.
Bing.
Matt Murdock himself.
Evening.
I remember like hearing Affleck. That he said he would never do another superhero movie because he did Daredevil and people hated
but
it.
Then they offered.
But then they offered him Batman. And he went, that was bullshit. I'm not gonna like.
Here's a check. Right
here, I'm gonna give you a check. You write a bunch of zeros on there, and then you can make as many fucking movies as you want.
Or in the case with Affleck, who I'm sure is kind of a nerd because he's like a friend of Kev Smith. Hey, do you want to be Batman? Sure. Yes. Absolutely. Why would I not want to be Batman? Ask any boy.
I think he's way too old, but I'm excited because I really like Affleck. I just think it's weird that they would pick an older guy to be Batman when they have a young guy being Superman, but whatever.
I like Affleck in Affleck movies.
I like Affleck in everything. I've never not liked Ben Affleck in a movie.
Even name a movie.
Affleck was the bomb in Phantoms.
Name another movie.
Reindeer Games.
I didn't see that movie. Name another movie.
Jersey Girl.
I didn't see that movie. Name another movie.
Good Will Hunting.
I didn't see that movie.
I saw the movie in theater and I got kicked out.
Good Will Hunting's great.
What were you doing?
Some of all fears.
Because he answered all the questions on the chalkboard and they were just like, who did this? And you denied it? And
what was I doing? I was 14 and just being a nuisance.
So. Being a nuisance.
14-year-old being a nuisance during Good Will Hunting? People are trying.
No, not Good Will Hunting. Some of all fears.
Jesus, Good Will keep Hunting. Up.
No, we've been talking about Good Will Hunting.
No, we haven't.
Yeah?
Jesus, I said I've never seen Good Will Hunting.
Every
you're like
movie
Robin
that,
Williams in
well,
Good Will
it's
Hunting.
Just you keep naming Ben Affleck movies I haven't seen, so I just keep like replacing them with movies that I have seen. So I'm gonna pretend.
So you've only ever
Good
seen Good Will Hunting?
That's
like
just
one.
That.
The Bourne
like the
trilogy.
The Bourne wasn't that Matt Damon?
That was Matt Damon. I do like
the movies that he made
Daredevil.
Are amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
The Town is amazing.
The Town is
not the Bourne is amazing. Argo is amazing. There's a bug on your face.
Nah,
there you go. That was a good movie too. There's a bug on your face with Ben Affleck.
Yeah. There's a bug.
So I'm gonna say it. Affleck gets the Geek Stampede stamp of approval.
Sure.
And if you disagree, then fuck you.
I know this is a movie tangent here. Rank Affleck's movies. Director movie.
Director ones.
Yeah,
the ones he directed.
There we
go. Gone Baby Gone. No. I like The Town more, actually. Town, Gone Baby Gone, Argo. They were all astounding, but...
The Town, Gone Baby Gone, Argo.
Yeah.
I've never seen Gone Baby Gone, so I'm The Town, Argo. Because Heist...
Yeah. I like the... Yeah. And Gone Baby Gone is fantastic.
Argo
so is Argo.
Like
Argo rules.
Heist, but,
yeah.
But
I really dug The Town. The Town was such a blast to
the
watch.
Town. The Town was just such a cool movie.
Okay, well, let's rank the live-action Batmans, then. Who's the best Batman live-action?
Jesus. George Clooney.
Is that your final answer?
No.
It may surprise you where George Clooney would fall on my list, though.
He wasn't... Okay,
heck
to be fair,
Bruce Wayne.
To be fair, I like George Clooney a lot, but even watching that movie, even he has the look on his face like, what the fuck am I doing?
Of the five live-action Batman, George Clooney is my number three.
Number one Batman. I liked Michael Keaton.
Yeah, for me it goes Keaton, Adam West, Clooney, Christian Bale, and then Val Kilmer. And
Val Kilmer sucks.
As I pointed out on Twitter, mostly to be an instigator, but also because I actually believe this, but I said it the way I did to be a jerk. Just because Christian Bale was in 1.5 good Batman movies, that doesn't change the fact that he's a horrible Batman.
Is that an instigation? An instigative?
It's an like, instigating comment? Thing to say.
Because I agree. I don't think he was very good.
No, the instigating part is that he was in 1.5.
Oh. Batman oh, okay. I get it now.
I disagree with that too because I know you don't like Batman Begins.
We'll be right back after a word from this bathroom. Sorry, I seriously, it hit me right now. I gotta go.
Here, we'll. We
you guys talk. Just keep talking. Yeah, yeah. It'll be I'm like gonna, a good 20 minutes.
Are you recording?
Don't talk. Yes, don't talk about any books.
I'm just gonna rank my Batmans.
Christian Bale.
I know Joey doesn't care.
Christian Bale kind of sucked.
I like Christian Bale.
I don't think I like him in anything, actually.
He's a good Bruce Wayne. He's. Have you seen The Fighter?
No, I've seen... With Christian Bale, I've seen American Psycho, which he was way too over the top.
Yeah,
I liked American Psycho!
That was a good movie, but he was too over the top. The Machinist.
No toilet paper in there?
Which was there was no toilet paper in The Machinist? If you watch The Machinist, there's literally no toilet paper in the entire
thing. I like The Machinist!
That was a cool movie, but I don't think he was very good. And I didn't like him in Swing Kids. Batman. He's an annoying Batman. Seriously,
he's not a great Batman. He's a good Bruce, very good Bruce Wayne.
Yeah, he's okay.
And that's how I kind of.
You're right. He's a good Bruce Wayne.
I feel the way about Clooney. I think Clooney was an excellent Bruce Wayne and a so-so Batman. But
well,
it's
to
just
be
that
fair,
movie
like that movie
sucks.
Was just
yeah.
dog shit.
Val,
I mean, it was
Val
just
Kilmer was the worst,
crippled from the first take. Like Val Kilmer was an absolute nightmare.
I'll get drive through.
One of the dumbest performances in anything I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Keaton
was really good.
Keaton's great. Really like and him. I don't really like Batman or Batman Returns.
Adam West was good. I haven't watched enough of the 60s Batman.
He's pretty
stuff
amazing.
He was
like,
pretty
fun.
Yeah. But so, I'm basing my opinion off like Ralph Garman's impression of Adam West from Hollywood Babylon podcast with Kevin Smith. But,
I like those old Batman TV shows. I liked Adam West. Keaton was really good, though. Like,
I think Keaton might be my favorite.
The first two Batman movies, Batman Returns, I like because I like Danny DeVito.
Fair enough.
and that's really not fair enough, though.
And Christopher Walken.
Those movies are just so Tim Burton, and I just don't care for Tim
that's,
Burton at
I'm,
all.
I'm
and the story, especially in the first Batman, how, like, the fucking Joker's Joe Chill. Some people think that that's cool. And I'm not, like... fanboy annoyed about it. It's because like, oh, Joe Chill has to be Joe Chill. I'm more just like, that's just dumb because that was literally a decision made because they're paying Jack Nicholson so much. Like, so they should just make him the bad guy in the end too, right? Wouldn't that make it as good an influence for him to become Batman? Like, well, I guess kind of.
It makes sense from a story. It's
kind of makes sense, but it's just dumb.
It's like it's one of those things though that like. A lot of people get angry about it for a silly reason, where they're like, "That's not continuity." Mm-hmm. I'm learning how to say that word right, I was reading a review today about there's that Silver Surfer digital comic that's coming out that Marvel's putting out by the guy who did Winter Soldier after Brew left, Jason Latour. He's writing and drawing this Silver Surfer. It's like an Infinity miniseries. And they're like chief complaint. They said they're like, oh, it's great. It's got really really cool art, and it's cool to see Silver Surfer back. And it's like, but the last time we saw Silver Surfer, he was tethered to Earth, and now he's like policing or he's going around. And it's like, oh,
no,
who fucking
really
cares?
Dumb.
Like, dude, you don't have to explain everything.
Really
here's the explanation. It's a comic book.
Yeah.
And I kind of feel the same way when like changes for movies, like how people are already up in arms that Ultron isn't Hank Pym's invention. It's like, who fucking cares?
No, the Batman thing isn't annoying because it's a change from the continuity. That's not why it bothers me.
No,
it bothers
me
because it's just dumb. Like, it's actually just so dorky. Like, Joker's the bad guy throughout the whole movie. Oh yeah, turns out the guy who was responsible for Batman being Batman was the Joker to begin with. It's like, well, he's already the bad guy. You've already established him as the bad guy. You don't need to add that second layer. Like, the layer of just street thug turns Bruce Wayne into guy who battles justice. That was fine. Like, yeah. That works. That's midichlorians to me. I mean, it's just like...
Yeah.
Turns out Joe Chill was actually Batman. Turns out the Force is actually these chemicals, midichlorians, in your body. It's like, I don't care about that. That's dumb.
Speaking of Star Wars, this is a nice bridge, because I wanted to talk about this because it has nothing to do with comic books, although I do buy a Star Wars comic book, so it kind of works. Episode 7, the guy, I can't remember his name is, but he's a cinematographer, he said that they're shooting it not on digital, they're shooting it on 35mm, just like the original Star Wars trilogy.
Really? Which, cool.
You know what that means? It's going to be fucking Star Wars, not dumb.
I
don't know how to explain that.
I like the prequel. I think I'll actually... I was saying earlier, a couple weeks ago, how little I care about it, but I think I'll see it, and I think I don't know. I really don't care that much, but it'll be cool. I'll check it out. Yeah, you're psyched.
And I like J.J. Abrams. I know Joey will disagree with this, but I really like his Star Trek movie.
I like his Star Trek movies.
He made me like something that I don't like. I don't like Star Trek. I've never been a Star Trek guy. I wouldn't say I hate Star Trek, but I just don't care.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed that. I still haven't seen Into Darkness, but... going back to it, I do really like J.J. Abrams as a director, and I think he's trying to really bring back the heart of Star Wars, but...
Who's doing that?
How they're
JJ.
putting Star Wars on 35mm is what I'm talking about. And I'm just saying that...
Oh, really? They're shooting on 35? Oh, that's cool.
So, and apparently it's because J.J. Abrams is trying to make Star Wars movies like the original trilogy, not...
You're telling me he actually has seen them, unlike...
Yeah.
Because he made a big fuss about pointing out that he's never seen a Star Trek movie when he started in Star Trek.
That's why I liked his Star Trek movie.
That's why they're not good.
I don't care about Star Trek. That's the thing. I've watched some Star Trek. I just don't care. I'm a Star Wars kid.
Cool. You boys want to talk about comics?
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
Let's talk about movies again.
I can do either. I'm breezy. So...
Yay.
Wow, I think this is the only book I have that I can talk about because all my other books are somebody's favorite. So, I will just be our...
Superior. I had fewer books this week. Spider-Man. So,
Superior Spider-Man number 16 with a cool cover. Mm-hmm. Dear DC, hire Humberto Ramos to do Batman covers.
Hire anybody.
Anyone to do a cover, yeah. This is part two of the Goblin story or whatever it was called. I don't remember. There was a name for this story. I hate when they put the name at the back.
It's not even at the front.
Oh, it's not anywhere. I only know it's part one of a two-parter because in the previous issue they pointed out that it was part one of a two-parter. Anyway.
It's probably like Hobbled Goblin. That was really funny, wasn't it?
Oh, God.
As I said that, I thought, this is good.
We get a cool showdown between Otto and Phil Urich, the Hobby Gobby. As well as we get to see a lot more of Carly and her investigations into determining that Peter Parker is no longer Spider-Man, that it's actually Doc Ock.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that's cool that they haven't forgotten about that. And we get a lot more set up for this whole Goblin Army thing that we've been seeing built up with Gobby. And we're pretty positive this is Norman, right?
Yeah.
Good.
They hint at it at one
point. Oh, is it... not been established?
Never showed it. I don't think they ever showed it explicitly being him, but I think we're led to believe that it is him.
Well, okay. And he even asks, he's like, you're taking me to see the Goblin, the real Green Goblin, Norman Osborn himself, and he's just told, wait here.
So, yeah, they never... when he's not in the Goblin suit, we never actually see him outside of shadows, I understand, I think. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, it sure looks like Norman, but I don't know, maybe that'll be a fun twist down the road that it's actually Peter Parker!
Snurp!
Oh,
wait a minute, wouldn't that be cool? Holy fuck. I don't know how that would work, but wouldn't that be awesome? Sense, but
oh my god, cool. Did you just think that?
I did, like, wow. Just off the top of my head. Oh my god, wouldn't that be the coolest thing ever?
Email slot.
If Peter Parker turned out to be that Green Goblin,
to
somehow get into
establish
Norman's,
himself in Norman's body so that he's trying to get his body back.
That would be so fucking cool. That happens.
Speaking of coming attractions, next issue is that Spider-Man 2099 crossover, isn't it?
Yeah, with Ben Reilly.
That's
gonna be cool.
I don't really know. I have faith in Dan Slott because I've really liked everything that I've read that he's done on Spider-Man. Anyways, so
yeah, sure, and the Spider-Man universe is actually one. I just noticed today in an announcement going to get a bit of a shakeup as issue 42 marks the last issue of Venom,
which I have heard good things.
It's been I didn't read the whole thing, but from what I read, I read the first like 20 or so issues, and it was really good.
Remender started that, right? He started on that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then I can't remember who
Colin Bunn has been taking over for a while.
He's a good writer. I like Colin Bunn.
Sixth Gun and Helheim are amazing. I haven't read any of his mainstream stuff, but now I've finally read some Sixth Gun, and Sixth Gun is an absolute blast. It's a really good book.
Was Colin Bunn the one that was co-writing with on Cap with Brew for a bit there before Brew left?
He also wrote The Tooth, right? The Tooth with
Maddie Kent.
Matt Kent, yeah.
I call him Maddie.
Maddie, like M-A-D-D-I-E.
Yeah.
I read
thumbs up for Spider-Man.
I read a big or part five of the Trinity War big event with a very cool Children's Hospital advertisement.
Was it as dopey as issue four? Like, which I read out of context and thought was dopey, but
okay, it's pretty dopey. I've been really I've been enjoying Trinity War. I really, really loved the first issue. The second one, I had some problems with the art. I thought the story was really good. The third issue was getting itself back on track, specifically because Mikael Janin is killing it on the art in Justice League Dark installments of Trinity War. He's doing...
Whoa, that is cool.
He's an astounding artist. I hope he gets...
I feel astounded.
Big stuff.
Shazam!
Coming up later in some more... This is like his highest profile DC work right now. This is where the story kind of falls off the rails for me. And it doesn't really derail the entire trajectory of the tale. It just derails my suspension of disbelief for it. Because at the end of the last issue, Wonder Woman has Pandora's box, and then she gets possessed by it in a very... In a very, kind of campy, dorky way.
Oh, yeah, I remember
and
that.
And the box has me. So, this Pandora's box... Yeah. And this Pandora's box has the ability to possess whoever holds it and makes them a dick. Basically, it turns them evil. So, in a sequence where Shazam grabs it, he turns evil... There's this really great double page spread of him turning evil, and then all of the magic users, even on Earth 2 of the DC Universe, also get possessed and go crazy.
Oh, poor dead man.
Yeah, and then the next page is just the reiterating, it's the same thing. It's like a beautiful page by Mikael Janin, but I was like, I feel as though the script was like, oh, we're a page short. You know how we just spent two pages showing you how Shazam turned bad? Let's just do another page of that exact thing with no words, and it's just a big picture of him turning bad again. So I was a little annoyed by that, because that is, like, this is a $4 book. Already three pages are telling you the exact same thing. But as it, again, though, Mikael Janin art is beautiful. But as it goes forward, more people get possessed by this Pandora's box. More people become evil. Frankenstein, who is dead... And just like dead matter that's been kind of sewn back together, apparently he's susceptible to it as well. So whatever, okay.
Isn't that
so
like kind his of one board. Strength? Is he's, that he's technically
whatever? Dead whatever. Like that part, he runs up to it and he's like, "Don't worry, I'm not alive or anything, so it won't bother me." But apparently it does, and he goes crazy, and then everyone fights over it, and it makes everyone turn like a jerk. And then Zatanna uses some magic saying, "Don't, no, everyone get away from the box." And so they all do.
Are you sure you didn't say, "Snobs need no"?
Yeah, that's exactly what you did. And then and they all, she says, "Enoi riv teg yawa morph ed zob morph." So then...
I mean, she just had a spell out.
This is where it actually just gets completely derailed for me. Because then there's a big sequence of pretty much everybody losing their minds. All of the Justice League, all the Justice League of America, and all the Justice League Dark losing their mind over this box. But don't worry, John Constantine is there to save the day. He picks up the box, lights a smoke, totally fine. Why is John fine? Because he's a dick.
Because he was shoehorned into this universe.
No, because he's
no,
a dick.
No, seriously.
Because he's a
he
dick.
He is susceptible to Pandora's box because...
Corrupt susceptible.
Listen to this. This is...
How they explain it.
This is the defense. This is how John Constantine is not susceptible to this Pandora's box. Corrupt me? Can't soil a pot that's already filthy, love. That's it.
Fuck, yeah. That's the worst dialogue.
You can't corrupt me because I suck.
Dog shit. Seriously. Fucking Wonder Woman, a god, is just like, I'm crazy! And then some asshole who smokes a bunch is like, yeah, I'm already a dick. It's
totally
fine.
Yeah, I'm a chain smoker. It's all good.
What the fuck?
Wait a minute. Yeah, what? So the box doesn't have him, then, is what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly.
He has the box but the box does not have
what
him.
What the fuck? Like, complete...
I just can't get over that line. That's so poorly written.
They totally shoehorned him into the story. He completely was not needed, was completely...
Bloody, bleeding, bloody hell.
Oh, my God. It's just turning one of my favorite characters into this asshole. It's just like, shut the fuck up. Really? This weird mystical object doesn't affect you because you're a dick? Okay. What makes him a dick? What has he done? I don't know. He smokes.
He smokes a lot.
He smokes and calls people names.
And he says bloody a lot, too. He says bloody.
Ugh. Yeah.
He's anyway, British, he is. So, you can tell by how much he says bloody. He's not as British as Dick Van Dyke and Mary Poppins.
Oh, my God. I don't understand
or
how...
Or sleep is as a lucky... As whatever. A lucky...
Whatever,
be.
Whatever. It's chim, just chim, charoo. Stupid.
I just can't get over that. And that's his Lemire, isn't it?
Yeah, this is
he's
Lemire.
Usually really good. But, like, I don't know what... I don't,
he's one of he's my good favorite creators his own in stuff. Comic books yeah. when he makes his own stuff.
Yeah.
Trillium
stuff,
is
bad.
Honestly one of my favorite comics to come out this year. I think it's brilliant. I think Jeff cool. Lemire is a genius, and he got me into comic books. But his superhero stuff does stuff like this to me, where I'm just like, what the fuck? Really, dude? Constantine isn't affected because he's mean? That is so retarded. So, this one really, really
get away with things too.
This one annoyed the piss out of me. But it gets to the end, and it turns out the box is like a portal to something, and then it reveals one of the guys from the Secret Society, and he's just a creep in a bowler hat who's like, yes, it's a portal, me! And that's pretty much how this
fucking
shit
is. You know he's not British, though, because he doesn't say bowler.
Well, I'm really sad that I don't read Event Comics anymore.
I wish he said savvy.
This one, yeah. Oh, man. I mean, the only problem that I had with Trinity War up until this point was the fact that Doug Monkey couldn't, like, they couldn't get one inker for Doug Monkey. Otherwise, Ivan Reis and Michael Janin are still, like, absolutely breathtaking. Like, such good art. And the story is compelling and interesting enough, but then there was that little plot point, and that's an important plot point, too. And it was just thrown out the window with... it drives me insane.
Here,
that they're
honestly,
wasting one of the best,
like,
characters ever.
Bad writing is when things happen because they have to happen for the plot to carry on, not because it makes sense for them to happen. So John Constantine being immune to Pandora's box because he needs to be immune to Pandora's box in order for the story to continue is bad writing. It's just shitty construction. It's lazy as fuck.
But the thing that pisses me off about it is that it's not even necessarily that I think it's lazy. It's an attempt to try and take a character like Constantine and cement him in the DCU and be like, check out Constantine. He's important. He's a part of all these event comics. Look at how important he is. He can do this stupid fucking bullshit thing that I made up. And you're like, but
no,
that's
it's
stupid.
Just,
that's such
it's
a waste.
Lazy,
like,
dude.
What
it's
is
like,
that?
Well, we need someone to be able to touch this thing or we can't continue the story. Well, how about Constantine? Sure, why? Because he's a jerk. All right.
Yeah.
That's just lazy. It's like, this needs to happen to continue the story, so let's just make it happen and fuck it, because who cares?
I mean, all they needed to do was say, oh, I'm casting a spell on the thing, so I'm immune. Like, that still would have been a bit of a cop-out, but at the very least, it wouldn't have pissed me off.
You know, like, what I wish they'd do? And this is coming from somebody who's not even reading the fucking thing, but you know how it ended perfectly for me? If it was just like, Superman punched it, and then Batman out-thought it. And then it's like, sweet. Like,
Superboy punched
sense.
A hole in time. See, like, and look at Infinite Crisis. Superboy punches a hole in time, and everything's fine. And you're like, okay, that's cool.
So
I'm with
I can
you.
Do that.
Yeah. But
I'm anyway, just going to start punching clocks.
This really upset me and annoyed me just because of taking already a character that I'm so, like... raw about annoyed doing this to him, and it's just like, what the fuck? Oh, you made him so stupid and lame.
Justice
How are
League
you
Dark,
doing this?
Okay, let's fuck with Rob.
Let's just piss off Rob.
Let's fuck with the one guy who had Hellblazer on
it's
his
weird,
pull
you know,
list.
Like it used to be when you were new to comics, you'd go and work for Marvel and DC and write these great stories, and then eventually, once you had a following, you'd go off and do creator own stuff. Now people create their comics, and then Marvel and DC goes, you're good, let's take this guy who's a good writer and make him write Superman, and it sucks.
But
most
let's tell
of the
him
time.
What he has to write.
Yeah, because but most of the time it's like, oh god, this guy is cashing a paycheck, and good for him. Good for him
absolutely,
for getting the job.
Absolutely.
Good for him for cashing the paycheck. I just don't want to read it.
Yeah. I'm still just such a sucker for DC. I love this universe so much. I love all these characters, and I am still like on board. I want to know what happens. It's just that one plot point makes me want to fucking like. drill a hole in my brain. It's just like, what the
I'm
fuck?
I'm so glad
this is
that
stupid.
I don't have any.
It's like, remember that video that you could really only get out of the library that was like Garfield and Alf and like a bunch of cartoon characters like trying to make you stop smoking?
Yeah, it was. It wasn't smoking, it was drugs.
Yeah, that's what Justice League Dark is. It's like taking Tony Soprano and throwing it in there and being like, you know, you shouldn't smoke cigarettes and you shouldn't do drugs. It's like taking a really cool character.
I don't understand this.
It's like taking a really cool character. A really awesome adult character, throwing it into just a big blender full of PG bullshit, and then getting you guys like and trying to sell it.
This is the worst analogy.
No, it's good.
I've ever
it's
heard.
A good analogy. Tony Soprano's dead, so you can't
believe it. You're talking about Alf and Tony Soprano.
No, I mean, it's
I'm so lost.
Kids, listen up.
I'm so lost. All right. In the crossover team up of the summer, it's
what
Tony Soprano and Alf. One cries to his therapist, the other eats cats. You won't want to miss it.
Okay, I think Alf is more evil than Tony Soprano, by the way.
I think I know what you're trying to say about taking an adult character that you liked that worked good for adult stories and trying to shoehorn it into a kid-friendly universe. Is that what you're getting at?
What I'm getting at.
Okay. It's like the opposite of the
is
new
that
Bond
it's
movies.
This big amalgam of a bunch of characters that everyone knows and recognizes, and they throw them on this bullshit adventure that's just silly.
But that's
it
every
make any
superhero
sense.
Comic.
But wait,
where does Alf come in?
Oh, fuck it.
No, no, please, no. You're not done. You're not done. I don't care. I care.
It's taking a character that has no business being in this weird ragtag superhero team to try. And do a bullshit.
So it's like taking Bill Murray from
story.
Meatballs and putting him into Carlito's Way. And then Alf shows up.
I would watch that.
All right. Yeah, I totally I get what you're saying.
No, you don't. It's fine.
I know. I
don't
do.
Even give it
I do understand time. What you're saying. I think the Elf thing was way out of left field.
I wasn't comparing him
today.
To Elf. I
no,
was just
that,
trying to
it just
draw.
Derailed me. You're just like, remember that drug video with Garfield and Elf? I'm like, yeah? You're like, it's like that.
All right. Yeah, yeah, okay.
All I can think of right now is like, oh. Bill but, Murray from Meatballs.
Oh, I can. Well, is he like you're thinking of Samurai Delicatessen.
What you said, Bill Murray from Meatballs?
Yeah, and then you did Samurai Pacino. Delicatessen voice.
I did Pacino.
Oh, come on now.
That's what.
But we listening Bill to Murray. You talk about it. It kind of makes me glad that in the last maybe 2 or 3 years, I've so. I don't know if it's fallen out of love or just stopped being interested in for whatever reason in superhero universes or in most superhero comics in general. Like, I recognize that a lot of them are as good, if not better, than they've ever been. Like, I hear about Avengers and I go, it's so awesome that Jonathan Hickman writes Avengers. It's so awesome that guys like Geoff Johns are writing the Justice League. So we have really talented people. And I just don't find that I think that they're bad. I'm just not interested. And it makes me glad that I'm not interested because I don't have to have that frustration when characters that I care deeply about. Like, I just, at a certain point, the number of superhero characters in books that I care about just dwindled away to nothing. Like, there's a half a dozen that I actually really care about. I read more than that, but there's really only 5 or 6 that I'd say that I actually, like, really care about. So, when Justice League Dark has a bad crossover, or an annoying plot point in a crossover that maybe isn't as good as something else, it doesn't bother me because I'm like, I wasn't going to read it anyway. So I feel for you, and I feel thankful for me that if, like, I only have to get mad at, like, Satellite Sam.
Was
but,
that,
yeah.
So was just, that two thoughts that you just, like, cut and paste with?
Kind of, yeah. I was just saying, like, the books that I actually find myself having
caring
any,
about,
like,
yeah.
Even Superior Spider-Man, I enjoy that book a lot, right? Like, I still read it, I still buy it, I like it. But when I'm finished reading Superior Spider-Man, I feel nothing really other than that was fun, but and then I move on. And even though it's really, really good, and I'll probably always buy Spider-Man because Spider-Man is one of those characters that I still care about, but I just don't feel like the desire or the excitement to read the new issue of Spider-Man, you know, or the new issue of Batman. Like if I suddenly tomorrow had to drop 99% of my books, I could drop those ones, and I'd be a little bit bummed to do it, but I'd be fine. But to drop something like Fatal or Satellite Sam are the ones that are actually, like, speaking to me at this moment in my life, that would be way harder for me. You know? And maybe part of it is that I've been reading superhero comics for, you know, 15 to 20 years now, and I've read a lot of superhero comics. Or maybe also a part of it is I have a tendency to be a little bit of a contrarian, even when I'm trying not to, and superheroes now are huge. You know, they're, like, bigger than they've ever been. We have superhero movies 10 a year. And, like, I was thinking to myself the other day, if you told me 5 years ago that there'd be, like, 9 superhero movies in a year, and I wouldn't care and wouldn't see most of them, that I wouldn't believe you. I was like, that doesn't sound right. But I honestly, I haven't seen more than half of the big superhero movies this year, and I don't care. Like, I'm not interested in seeing them. And I don't particularly like the other ones, because I'm just not interested. And it's not that they got bad. I just, they didn't change, I did. You know?
This is like the end of the Jerry Springer show when he talks about what we've learned. This is way more coherent than the end of the Jerry Springer show.
What's important is we take care of each other. No, but you know, so...
And we don't fuck our cousin's husbands or something.
We don't do that either.
Fuck our cousin's husbands.
What I'm saying is, comics, good. Happy read.
See, I think...
Jolly balls.
I think that's, like, me and you differ, and clearly I only buy, like, Marvel books, and it's because I've been buying comics for, like, a year. I've been reading comics for like three, four years.
I don't want it to sound like I somehow think I'm above these comics now, because I don't.
I think it's just I think I'm just burned out. If you grow up on science fiction movies, there's a pretty good likelihood eventually you're gonna be like, I don't want to watch another fucking science fiction movie for the rest of my life.
You know, it's no different than like you and I are big wrestling fans, and we've managed to bring up wrestling on the pod, so Rob can. Be happy with that. The number of wrestling matches you and I have seen. So if you sit with somebody who's just started watching wrestling, they go, that was the best match I've ever seen. And you're like, in the context of all of the other matches I've ever seen with those two guys in particular, that match sucked. Because you haven't seen all the awesome other ones that they've done. You know,
you haven't seen Steamboat Savage WrestleMania 3.
Is that your favorite match?
That might be my favorite match of all time.
Cactus Jack, Triple H, Royal Rumble 2000.
Fair enough. I knew that, actually. I think Steamboat Savage, it's just so ahead of its time. That, or, I don't know. I do definitely agree with you on that, though. Like, the stuff that I liked 10 years ago from wrestling, I don't like now. Chair shots to the head.
Yeah, you know, you're...
Even something like that, although that's more of like a... No, there's actual bad consequences of that happening, but even still, like, just, like, extreme matches, hardcore matches in general, I'm just like, there's no motivation
it's
for me to watch.
It's just with any kind of art form. Once you've seen the same thing over and over again, and superhero comics, for better or for worse, are oftentimes very much the same. Because that's what the fan base wants. They want the same kind of thing all over. And that's why the books that we like a lot are things like Hickman books and Fraction books, because they actually do something interesting and new and different. But the majority of mainstream comics, like mainstream movies, like mainstream television, are always going to play to the lowest common denominator or to the most populist audience, you know? They try to be something to everyone instead of being really, really, really good at this thing that only appeals to these people, you know?
Because at the end of the day, money's nice.
Yeah, I mean, I totally get that. So I think that the context has a lot to do with it. We've seen other things like this, and as a result, we're more critical of the ones we do see, and you get bored, you know? And then the good thing about superheroes is that eventually it'll be a few years where I hardly look at them, and then I'll be like, I miss my superhero comics. Mm-hmm. And I'll go back and start reading them again. Not that I've stopped, because I only had 4 books this week, and 3 of them were superhero books. Anyway, does that make sense? Do I come off like a... Like an old man? Old person?
Well, always, but I mean...
Fuck you.
Zing.
Guys, anyway, we're 30 minutes into the show and we've talked about one book. This is a new record. Up here, bring it in.
All right.
Okay. No, I'm going for the triple. Anyway, let's talk about another superhero crossover book.
Oh, no, we talked about 2 books. Sorry. We did talk about 2 books. My bad. All right, yeah, let's do it.
We'll talk about the one other book that I can talk about, the one and only book.
Can I see your stack, Rob?
This is barely a superhero comic. This is just a fucking sci-fi awesome adventure that
and
happens
that's why
to have
you
Captain
like it,
America
and
in
why
it.
A lot of people love it. Because they're like, this is dope. What the fuck is going on?
Now, here's the thing. I don't get it. I read this last night, and I woke up at 5:30, and I probably read this at, I don't know, 9:30, 10, probably after 10, actually. So I don't remember much about this. There's Skrulls. Oh, sorry. This is Avengers issue 18. Jonathan Hickman and Linnell Yu, who I didn't even realize it was him until halfway through. And I was like, this looks like Linnell Yu. And then I was like, oh, Anyways, this is an Infinity tie-in. There's Skrulls, including one Super Skrull, and he's like, "We've united the Skrulls, except for one." And I think that's what happens. I don't know.
It's interesting. The entire Galactic Council, they all come together with the Avengers to try and get rid of the Builders, and that's why the Avengers have left Earth.
Which is strange, if you're reading Guardians of the Galaxy, because in the Guardians of the Galaxy, they're like, you guys all have to stay away from Earth because they're just fucking everything up, basically.
Well, no, but the Builders coming, anywhere.
Yeah,
they're wiping out systems with every single place.
They come. I guess they're not actually at Earth.
They're not all defending Earth. They're just defending the universe.
A fair point.
It's time to conquer Earth.
And it's really cool to see. It's really cool, especially to see certain Avengers fight alongside Annihilus and Queen of the Brood, and a lot of these characters that you've seen them fight a million. And the Kree Supreme Intelligence is one of my favorite.
I also love Falcon's like spacesuit.
Yeah,
it's weird looking and cool.
That was such a cool, like, when it shows the cast page, and it shows who's traveling in Quinn Cruiser 1, who's traveling in Quinn Cruiser 2, and then who's free-flying, and it was like Thor, Thor, obviously he's a god, Hyperion, obviously he's a Superman, Ex Nihilo, obviously he's also kind of a god, and then Falcon, he can fly through space.
Falcon, he's a black guy with built wings.
Because he's got wings, he can fly through space, right?
But if he flies too close to the sun...
This was an intergalactic war comic.
Yeah, this
that
is,
had
this
Cap
was,
in it for like a couple pages.
Probably not even, because this will happen one day. But this is the closest thing so far to an Avengers Star Wars.
Yeah, this was like the end of Return of the Jedi.
Yeah, it's just a big space battle.
It was so cool. The colors, whoever did the colors in this book deserves a medal.
Sunny Go, you get a medal.
How colorful all these pages of
that artwork looks so nice.
It
looks really
beautiful.
Cool.
So I love
beautiful
art.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this full page of them all kind of going in at that one builder ship, and then the builders kind of fuck them in the end. It's it's awesome.
They trick them with cloaking devices.
Cool. It sounds fun. I can't wait to read all this stuff.
It's such a cool space battle.
It's really cool. I think this. Event Infinity has gotten up to a really good start. Two issues in,
I think
2 issues in.
Hickman's killing it. Hickman's doing everything I want to read out of a big Avengers book.
We'll put it this way: I didn't read Age of Ultron, but the only big event that I really have bought was Avengers vs. X-Men, and this is so much better already.
Oh yeah, I like it a lot more.
And Avengers vs. X-Men, I like
because
I like Age of Ultron.
Yeah. AVX is playing or plays really, really heavily on how cool the characters involved are. And it kind of plays off of, isn't it cool to see the Avengers and the X-Men fight?
No, it's not.
Yeah, it's just like, well, I guess. I mean,
it was cool
in
1965 when I first saw it.
But this is going off of, hey, this is a really cool cosmic science fiction tale.
Yeah.
Would you like to see some spaceships blow up?
Yes!
I would love to see that, please. And it's really cool spaceship espionage. It's got it's a war comic. It's a war comic with laser guns. It was excellent.
Cool. Do you guys want to play a game?
Yeah.
Yes.
It's called Does This Make Sense? I'm going to tell you the title of a DC comic solicited for September for November. That is tying into Batman Zero Year, and you'll tell me if that makes sense.
Oh, I know the answer to this.
Okay, so first one, Action Comics number 25, Batman Zero Year tie-in.
That's the Greg Pak one.
Yeah,
sure.
I'm like, I mean, it's a bummer that Greg Pak's second issue is going to be a crossover, but hey,
it's his first issue.
Oh,
that's
great,
dog
even
shit.
Better. I mean, all right, still, that's kind of cool. Batgirl, makes sense.
Sure,
it's a bat book.
You know,
Batwing.
Yep.
Also got the word bat in the title.
Yeah.
Birds of Prey.
Sure.
We're teetering. Yeah, we're on the fringes
we're
of the Batman universe.
Tittering.
Catwoman.
Absolutely.
No.
Sure.
Bats and cats are different.
Okay. Nightwing.
Sorry.
Of course.
Absolutely.
Detective Comics.
Yeah.
Nope.
I mean, yes, because it's a Batman book. No, because why do all four of the Batman books have to be about? But
Dark Knight isn't.
If the whole point of having other Batman books, anyway. Okay. The Flash. What crucial part did Barry Allen play in the Zero Year Saga? Answer, he shouldn't have. He's in a
care.
Different
this,
city.
This,
that
next
is
the best. This next one's the best.
Green Lantern Corps.
What?
Isn't it like, it's John Stewart, isn't it?
Yeah.
When the Riddler throws Gotham City into total darkness, a young Marine named John Stewart is deployed as part of the peacekeeping measures, and then he has to fight anarchy.
You know what? That weirdly almost does make sense, because it's like an origin story for John Stewart,
stupid.
But it's silly.
Green Arrow.
Yeah.
Street level hero, but yes. Still not.
Is
this
he
another
Gotham
waste
City?
Of a fucking
no.
issue?
Red Hood and the Outlaws. Fine, sure. Batman books. Okay. That one's no. I think we may be at the end of those tie-ins now. Okay, now these are all for real tie-ins now. But I was, some of them I was just like, why? Looking at this, almost every single book that comes out in November is a crossover with either Zero Year or Forever Evil.
Yeah.
Fuck! I'm really looking forward to having not a single DC book to have to buy in September. Okay, but that was just a quick game. Do you guys want to do a Newsarama top 10?
Okay.
Yes.
Because these are always fun.
Yeah.
So these are DC's 10 most dangerous villains in the DC universe.
The most dangerous?
The most dangerous. So,
is
before
just
we start.
Darkseid?
So we should think Darkseid should be on the list, right?
Just,
he's pretty dangerous.
Be it.
I would say the Joker.
Brainiac.
The Joker. Brainiac. Definitely
Joker.
Brainiac. The Joker. Because the Joker, he'll poison your reservoir. He'll do it. He's crazy. Brainiac will take your town and put it into a little jar. Mr. Mixelplick.
Oh, yeah. He can totally rearrange your entire dimension.
Yeah.
And you're
although
all
it's
fun.
Pretty... easy, because you'd think it would be hard to trick someone into saying their name backwards, but apparently it's
works
not
for
that
hard. Yeah, not that. Backwards, but just,
you just
you
have
know,
to say it forward.
Just
this
say
is
his
even
name.
Harder than that.
Yeah.
Okay, who else? I would say Clayface.
Yeah,
Clayface can be anyone.
Yeah, yeah.
He it's like the
Reverse Flash.
Reverse Flash. You can go back in time and fuck shit up.
Yep.
Just like the Flashpoint miniseries. Okay, these are all good ones.
What about
Captain Cold? Because he just looks like Mole Man.
I'm not gonna say Captain Cold. He's cool.
any of the other Flash rogues? No.
Not really. No.
Really not. You know what? You could say Sinestro. Although he's kind of like an on again off. Yeah, right? All you gotta do is take off the guy's ring. I mean,
I mean Sinestro
ring,
is pretty
sure.
Dastardly.
I'll give you Sinestro.
Zod is pretty dangerous.
Zod?
Lex Luthor.
Luthor, absolutely.
Yeah,
Luthor
as a mad scientist.
Definitely
absolutely.
Luthor.
In this, he's very dangerous.
John Constantine, because he's such a
shut
dick
the fuck up.
That he touched
yeah, he's
Pandora's,
such a dick.
He
yeah.
touched Pandora's oh, box
Jesus
and got away.
Christ. He touched Pandora's box and got away with it.
He wasn't even given permission.
Anton Arcane, he destroyed the whole world. Remember,
I disagree.
Black
just
Adam
because he's
Black Adam. Yeah, Doomsday.
Yeah,
Parasite because he can actually take Superman's powers.
Yeah,
that's dangerous.
Yeah,
Bane almost killed Batman once.
Once and he's been living off.
Two-Face is 50-50, like 50% chance he could shoot you.
Killer Croc.
Killer Croc.
Gorilla Croc.
Anytime.
Killer Croc and Gorilla Grodd
I mean,
team up.
Okay, that would be so awesome as
yep.
a buddy road film.
Yep.
Anyway, that's quite Firstborn. Let's say Firstborn as well. That's a pretty good list of scary guys, right?
And also, all pale in comparison to Pace Pot Pete.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, what if I were to tell you that I think only one of the people we mentioned makes this list?
Oh my God.
Number 10, Eclipso. Oh,
JSA guy?
Yeah, apparently Eclipso has shown up in a few places
Team
in 7, Team 7, but...
The Team 7 arc that he was in was very long.
I remember when Eclipso was Jean Loring after Identity Crisis, which was kind of a cool story.
I remember Eclipso from old JSA stuff.
Yeah.
Eclipso was taken out within, I think it was a two-issue arc, honestly. Uh-huh. It wasn't very long.
But yeah, very dangerous.
Oh, no, it was the Black Reign arc, and it was mostly Black Adam. Eclipso was just
yeah.
there.
You know who I would, here's a list of villains who I think are scarier than Eclipso. Gentleman Ghost. That should be enough, but I'll continue if you want. War Wheel, that big spiky Nazi wheel.
That
the dinosaurs from the War That Time Forgot. Pace Pot Pete. All right, number 9, Time Trapper. Do you know who Time Trapper is?
Nope.
It's a guy
exactly.
in that thing.
Time Trapper has only appeared in two issues of the Paul Levitz Legion Secret Origin book. So he can kind of control time. He was powerful in things like Zero Year and Final Crisis, but I don't know.
Zero Year?
Zero Hour, sorry, not Zero
oh,
Year.
Okay.
Zero Hour. So, I don't know.
He's like
I guess.
Evil watcher?
Considering, kind of. Considering he's only shown up for like two issues in the Legion Secret Origin, I don't think he's too dangerous. Necron.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay, that one's not stupid.
Basically, the Grim Reaper
has,
is what Necron is. Only
pretty much.
Cosmic Grim Reaper.
Which sounds awesome when you say it like
yeah.
that.
This is weird because
Necron
I don't
in
DC villains.
In Blackest Night was actually really cool.
Yeah, Necron's a cool character.
Scary.
Imperiex. Okay, here's the thing, guys.
Like the bad guy from The Running Man, who like he has to play hockey against.
Had completely forgotten that this character existed. Because I remember it from the Worlds of War storyline with the Jeff Loeb stuff, but that was like 13 years ago. I don't think that he's shown up in a long time, but he looks like you remember those like weird little candies that you'd put on gingerbread houses?
Yeah.
They're all sticking out of his uniform.
Yeah. They look like light bulbs.
Superboy Prime. Well, he's kind of like a whiny bitch Superman. Now, I don't think he has been in the New 52, has he?
No,
he
hasn't.
No,
but he was actually a really cool villain.
I liked him, yeah.
Infinite Crisis.
They kept him going way too long, but
yeah.
I think I would have thought they would limit this to the actual current DC universe, but whatever. Prometheus.
That's a Batman villain. I knew that one.
He hasn't shown up in the New 52. Yeah. I don't know, I guess.
He's just a guy with a sword?
He's like a mean version of Batman.
Yeah.
Alright. I mean,
so, I don't know. He doesn't strike me as that dangerous.
Shoot that guy.
Parallax.
Sure.
That's even what I was thinking.
Yeah, God, not a stupid idea.
That makes sense.
Parallax. Okay.
Well, a lot
We've
of the
had
Green
two
Lantern
so far.
Villains.
We're on number four, two of them
so
far.
Yeah, okay. A lot of the Green Lantern villains could be very dangerous because, again, the second that you. The second that Parallax is fear.
Yeah.
You know, it's a pretty broad
As soon as
concept.
Your villain is an abstract concept, then you're either in a DC comic book or an Ingmar Bergman film.
That's why Pace Pot Pete is the most dangerous of all. He's a very abstract concept.
Number three, the Anti-Monitor. I love the Anti-Monitor.
Awesome.
We've only actually seen him once. Like, he was only actually alive as a villain in Final Crisis on Infinite Earths, right? His corpse was in... Infinite Crisis, wasn't
Infinite.
It?
Yeah.
But he was dead. They built that thing inside of him. And the Anti-Monitor is an awesome
Prime
character.
And, the Lex Luthor, Alexander Luthor from.
But
Earth 2 or whatever.
So I mean, if this character wasn't dead
cool.
and
I
was in
the
New 52, then yes.
So
the Crime Syndicate of America. All right, we're starting to make a little bit more sense. The CSA does make sense.
Yeah.
They haven't shown up in New 52, have they?
No.
I don't think so. Isn't there an Earth 2 book though? Like.
There is, but Jamie.
Well, yeah, these are actually from Earth 3, though, so that would make sense.
I don't know.
And finally, Darkseid. So they had one that would make a lot of
sense.
But that list was kind of dumb. Keep going, Newsarama. You always give me lots of stuff to talk about on my podcast.
Darkseid was kind of a gimme.
Yeah. That was. But
that
seriously,
makes sense.
Lex Luthor.
Yeah, what the fuck? I mean.
How is Lex Luthor on the list? I mean, I don't know. What about Doomsday? He killed fucking Superman. Although, after he kills Superman, he gets beaten by, like, the Teen Titans every other week. The guy kills Superman, and suddenly we're just like, we need a big, scary guy. You know what he becomes? He becomes the Big Show, circa, like, 2008.
Yeah.
We're like, we need someone. Rey Mysterio needs to be put in a match against somebody. Or the Great Khali, better example.
Yes.
You have to finish a match against the Great Khali. Oh, you mean the guy who hasn't won a match since 2004?
Hey, he'd be somebody lately.
Remember when he was in the main event for the World Heavyweight Championship against like Triple H and somebody?
That one SummerSlam that we went to in the theater? Were you there?
No.
That
would have been like the most depressing thing ever.
You know what? It actually, the feed cut out for the first like three quarters of the match, so we just saw the end. It's like, that's all we needed
to see. That's all we wanted to see. Anyway.
People cheered when the satellite cut out when he was walking out. It was amazing. Except for like two... Ah, never mind.
He's the Punjabi playboy.
Yeah. Is that racist?
That's how they say.
Drop some science on us, bro. I'm gonna eat your chips.
Okay, good.
I'm eating your chips. Ba-boom.
Okay, I'm gonna go through all of my books very, very quickly,
and then
just gonna give you a number of what I thought of them.
And then I want to talk about.
All right, it's time for comics with Robbie G.
And then I'm gonna.
I read like two
trades.
I read.
Okay.
After. All right. So Superman Unchained.
Out of 5. 10.
Out of 5.
Or 10.
Out of 10.
Or out of 5, but use halves.
Do I have to give it a number? I don't know. I'll just tell you what I thought about it.
This is your idea.
Okay.
Have you not
I would have
seen
given
that movie? What's
this,
your number?
I would have given this like a 4 out of 5. I really enjoyed this. I think Scott Snyder writes this incredibly well. He's got a really good story coming.
Would you
Plus,
say he's brilliant?
I love Scott Snyder. Do I say that a lot about people?
You do.
Well,
it's okay. It's funny. It's like your catchphrase. Mine's bonerific.
Lex Luthor is a crazy mad scientist in it, and he writes it very well. Lois Lane is piloting an aircraft into. Well, it's good. It's a good book.
Is that guy on the cover good or bad?
He is both.
Oh.
Hmm. It's like an Ingmar Bergman.
That makes no sense.
I don't know. I don't want to explain the past three.
Is he like an abstract concept like Parallax?
Explain it to me later, because
he's basically the anti-Superman that the U.S. government uses instead of bombs. Instead of nuclear bombs, they have this thing, which is very cool.
Is it like Bizarro?
His name is Wraith, I think.
Oh, cool. So he's Dr. Manhattan. Yeah, that's a better poll. Good job.
He's very Dr. Manhattan at the very end.
Is his dong hanging out?
Yes.
Is it blue? Probably.
The front cover should just say 60% more dongs.
I would buy that book.
I like that a lot. Animal Man was okay. Pretty good. It was all right. Here's the thing. I would have given this a 2. Because...
The cover looks like something from Avengers. It looks like the current Avengers thing with what's-his-nuts.
Ex Nihilo.
So,
thank you. Yeah, him.
It does. Yeah, no, his horns definitely look like that.
He's quite horny.
There's a sequence throughout this issue, or throughout this series...
Sorry.
The Splinter Species, where basically of this arc called Splinter Species, where Maxine travels into the Red with Shepard and goes on adventures, and she's looking for the soul of her brother, or is looking for Cliff. And there's this awesome sequence where she boards a bone pirate ship with Shepard, and the pirate captain is a giraffe with an eye patch, and there's also a parrot with a hook.
Awesome.
It's so cool, and it's about 3 pages, and then the rest of it is stuff that I really just wish that this book just became Maxine on adventures with crazy animal pirates, but it's not that. And it ends very quickly. There's a sequence where she goes through this really cool Willy Wonka-esque type cavern, and that bit that scared me when
is the grizzly reaper
mowing? That part that was the best part by far throughout Splinter Species, but it's very short-lived, unfortunately. And it kind of goes back to being bleak and kind of a bummer. And it's not as good as it used to be. However, Animal Man is, you know, it's good enough that I still follow it. I enjoy it. Rafael Albuquerque is taking over later.
Really?
Yeah, there's going to be there's a hiatus next month for Villains Month, and then Rafael Albuquerque is taking over. Brother Lono is very upsetting. It's so violent. It's great. It's a really cool book. If you like 100 Bullets, then you know what you're getting yourself into with how stomach-churning it actually is with its violence. So it's not like I'm surprised, but it is, but because it's Lono-centric, Lono was always the character in 100 Bullets that was miserable to read because he was so over-the-top, just heinously evil.
I gotta finish that one.
100 Bullets is amazing. This miniseries is very good. I like it a lot. I'm glad it's back. I'm glad to see that team coming out with a monthly book. This X-Men by Brian, number 4 by Brian Wood and David Lopez, I think. David Lopez was a standalone issue before the Battle of the Atom crossover. It was an excellent standalone issue. I love the way that he writes Storm specifically. It's a really cool espionage one, but it's Storm. And Storm gets in a fight with Rachel Gray. Meanwhile, Psylocke and Kitty Pryde and Rogue are all trying to rescue these people off of an airliner that's about to crash into the ocean. And meanwhile, Wolverine and Jubilee are hanging out at a mall, and he's being very nice to her.
Aww.
They hang out at the mall where she was originally found by the X-Men.
Let's go to the mall today.
new Conan the Barbarian arc, Black Stones, with Paul Azazeta and Brian Wood. This may be some of my favorite art in the series.
I like
so
that.
Far.
Sorry.
Absolutely, it's a great arc. I'm hoping Brian Wood stays on because he was only solicited for the first 25. So it's going to be this arc and then the arc after, and then he might be done his run on Conan. I hope he sticks around for a while longer. I've really loved what he's done. Chin Music number 2. There's some pages of Tony Harris's stuff that are... Like, it's the busiest Tony Harris I've seen artistically. Steve Niles and Tony Harris. Steve Niles is scripting a really cool Prohibition era crime drama with Elliot Ness and the murder of Al Capone. But there are some pages that are really cool looking, but they're very busy, and I'm not certain what's going on in them. And there's other pages that I feel are like it's a double page spread, and there's just like not a lot going on, and it almost seems kind of Hesh or haggard. so it's a very cool series. I'm definitely on board. I'm really interested in the story. It's not my favorite Tony Harris stuff that I've seen, but it's very interesting. This one doesn't fit the tone of the book for me as much, but probably following issues I'll gush over his work, I'm sure.
I read the first issue and then gave it a pass on the second issue.
I forgot to buy it, but I will pick it up.
I am digging it. I do really like Steve Niles.
I remember when we had to have you on the show explain to me the first issue because I didn't really get it. But I'm notoriously stupid.
I
remember
listening to that episode because I wasn't here for it.
And I don't dislike Tony Harris by any stretch of the imagination. I actually really like Tony Harris. I'm a huge Ex Machina fan, and I like Starman a lot.
I mean, he sounds like he's a bit of a wang, but whatever.
I like his work.
Yeah, me too.
He draws a lot of big dicks in this issue. It's very Howard Chaykin.
Wait, does he actually?
Yeah,
it's very Howard Chaykin.
Yeah. Oh, that's
anyway, that was interesting. Revival is always a spectacular book with spectacular covers. And then Fables. This is part two of Camelot. I'm not going to reveal anything, don't worry. Fables is always a great read. And it had one of my favorite Rose Red moments of the entire series. It had a really cool sequence where they're trying to get people to join the round table. And Rose Red has sent like all the birds of Fable Town to go and recruit people. And it has one of my favorite appearances of a Fables character who has never been in the comic, has only been in Peter and Max. And you see Peter and Bo for a page. It's cool. Very cool. And Bo is going to take a center role in Camelot in this new arc. So it's an excellent arc by Bill Willingham.
Is that the first one of the arc?
It's the second.
Cool. So can I tell you guys something really cool?
I'm done. Bye.
Okay, so here's what I think is cool. It's crossing over worlds that I love. As you know, I am a movie geek. And I particularly like the Criterion Collection, yes?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
They put out awesome, cool movies in really, really fantastic packages and all that. They announced for November a box set of all of the Zatoichi films, which are these Zatoichi the Blind Swordsman. They're kind of like the Japanese equivalent of James Bond, even though they're not spy movies, they're samurai movies, but there's 25 of them. They're releasing a box set of all 25, which I'm going to get because it sounds amazing. The cool part where this comes into play here is that they have 26 comic book artists doing the individual box art for each movie. Would you like me to tell you the list?
Yeah.
Sure.
Because it's pretty cool. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway. Sean Phillips.
No. Sorry. He has done three different things for Criterion, though. I have two of them. Okay. So here's the list. Greg Ruth, Paul Pope, Scott Morse, Josh Cochran, Evan Bryce, Ricardo Venancio, Robert Gooden, Yuko Shimizu, Jorge Coelho, Vera Brosgol, Connor Williamson, Patrick Ledger, Jim Rugg, Yomar Soriano, Angie Wang, Ming Doyle, Caitlin Kuwald, Benjamin Mara, Bill Sienkiewicz, Andrew McLean, Polly Guo, Barnaby Ward, Victor Curlo, and wait for it, Robbie G, Matt Kint.
What?
Sorry, Matt MF and Kint. Yeah. So
that's fucking awesome.
I am all the fuck over this. Like I was already hoping to get. Oh my god, I would just be everywhere.
Oh my god, Matt Kint.
But like, yeah, they all look really cool too. Each of these covers looks really cool.
You can see all the covers already.
Yeah, yeah. They're aren't been done for a while. It comes out in November, but
why didn't they get Michael Allred to do one? That's my only question.
I don't know, bud. But yeah, so I'm excited. I love the Criterion Collection, and I've always wanted to see a Zatoichi film, and now I can see all 25 of them in a cool box set. I think it's only like 200 and some bucks. Like, it's not that bad.
That's considering, pretty good for that
considering
many.
You get 25 Blu-rays in a really cool box set.
That is very interesting. Mm-hmm. That's astounding.
Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Can I talk about the two trades that I read?
Please.
I spend money. I got the first trade of Morning Glories, and then I texted you and I was like, I just read the first trade of Morning Glories. What happened? Because it's really cool.
It's such a good
but
book.
I have no idea what's going on, and it's so cool.
I have read the first four trades, and I have less of an idea of what's going on.
See, I like it because the reason I want to read the next one is never because I'm like, what the fuck is going on?
No, absolutely.
I was like, this is so great. I can't wait to see what happens next.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That's good writing.
Yeah,
because it goes down into this really cool labyrinth. But it doesn't just continually get darker and darker to the point where you're just like, I'm completely lost now.
Yeah.
It always illuminates what's behind you, obviously. Yeah. It illuminates around you, so you kind of get an idea for the feel of the universe, definitely for the feel for a feel of the characters. Mm-hmm. And a general feel for the trajectory of the book, so that there are big surprises. Mm. However, they're organic surprises, like they make sense. And they're not just, holy shit, it's a thing. And how does this thing have anything to do with anything that we've read so far? Nothing, but it's a surprise, right? Like, it's really well written, really well plotted, and it's also very well realized.
Yeah.
So it's cool to read a book where...
and it's got some beautiful artwork.
It's really good.
Right now, but...
Rogan Asuija or something like that?
Yeah. Yeah. Where it's cool to read a book where every twist and every turn... you can tell has been premeditated.
Yeah, like it's not like Lost in season 3.
Yeah, premeditated, and also it builds on all earlier concepts. Like the crazy stuff with Casey at the beginning.
Yeah.
There's huge revelations later that don't just kind of, you know, dig you deeper. They're building on top of that.
Yeah.
Kind of, I don't know. It's really good.
Definitely
the best Nick Spencer stuff.
I got to the end of the first, like, actual issue where... you see her walking to the room with her parents hanging up, and spoiler, but I mean, that issue's been out for fucking a long time, so her parents are dead. And I was just
even
like,
if you spoil the first issue, there's a huge moment like that in every issue.
Yeah. Well, the end of that first trade, I guess issue 6, is like, what? Because it builds it up the whole time. And then also, I read the first hardcover, the Lock and Key. Welcome to Lovecraft, is like, it's so cool.
Sweet.
That was kind of sad because I couldn't pick up the second one.
Do you want to borrow mine?
Can I, please?
Yeah.
Oh my god, it's so cool. Is it Gabriel Rodriguez?
Is the artist,
And it's fucking Joe Hill. Gorgeous, and I'm not a big horror guy, and it's kind of a horror, like, supernatural story. And it's just so cool.
Are you excited for our Halloween date, Ryan, of watching VHS 2 like we did last year with VHS 1?
Actually, yeah, because I've heard
I've heard it's
stupid,
even better.
And I've read reviews, and I'm like basing whether I want to see it off that, though. That's the thing.
Oh, well, you
were
pretty
scared
by the first one, but
I will see. Just that one short with the succubus girl. But now it's going to stick with me again for another month. But that... I was reading the reviews, and they're like, it's like almost sillier in a way, but better. Like, and
nice.
I'm like, yes, and like, there's an alien one and stuff, so I'm cool. As long as there's an alien somewhere, I'm good.
I'm totally excited.
Although the webcam one is kind of an alien sort.
It's okay.
But yeah, VHS one was neat.
I like that movie.
Except when they like the bridge parts where they're like, whoa, let's walk by this room. The old man's not in the couch anymore. And they don't notice. And I'm like,
I like that.
And then at the end, guess what? The old man kills them because that's what happens in a horror movie. And I spoiled it.
Sorry,
old
I was,
man
I was still
you.
Thinking of Horror Island.
What?
MILF Island.
No, it's Horror Island and Archer.
Oh yeah,
Horror Island. MILF Island is like 30 Rock.
Yeah, I've been watching 30 Rock, and that's why I'm kind
of. I need to finish all of 30 Rock.
Do you have any more comments to talk about, Robbie G, before we hit the special time of the show where we make up some music?
Thank you for letting me talk about that so long.
There's no more lists, no more fun stuff.
Oh, we do have another list, actually. We want to do one more Newsarama list?
All right.
I feel like we're short.
Okay, these are the 10 X-Men properties that are golden for film.
Is X-Force on there?
Why don't you wait till we get... So that's your pick? It should be X-Force? Which
that's
version of
X-Force?
I would say Uncanny X-Force. I don't give a fuck about the early X-Force.
Honestly,
stuff.
I don't care about X-Men. Extreme X-Men should be...
Oh yeah, they made a movie out of the Extreme X-Men. That'd be
I'd
wicked.
Be into that
are
or Exiles. They're saying
I don't understand the criteria.
The
I'm sure X-Men.
The context is because Mark Millar has said that there's 5 to 10 golden properties within the X-Men family of characters to bring
Millar's
from comics to film. But he's the guy who's like the Marvel movie guy. Anyway, here's their picks. Number 10, Deadpool. Well, they've been fucking saying that they're going to do it forever. So yeah, that's
then
a real
in a movie and
real
didn't
creative.
Let him talk.
Yeah. But I just think that's a really brilliant pick that, like, Fox has been saying, yeah, we're making this.
Yeah.
Fuck me. Anyway. Number 9, The New Mutants. That's a cool pick. I would see a New Mutants movie. I mean, it would be a bit of a sell because no one's ever heard of Karma, Moonstar, Cannonball, Magma, or Sunspot, but I would be excited.
I've only heard of Sunspot because of Hickman.
Yeah.
That's the only
They're all cool characters, and I always like Danny Moonstar a lot. Anyway, she lost her powers after M Day. Maybe she has them back now. I don't know. Number 8, Gambit.
No,
that movie,
no,
people would
off.
Go to see it though. People
yeah,
fucking love
true.
Gambit.
True.
Yeah. You know what I would like more than Gambit? A couple
Anything.
Of ants.
That's
yeah.
All up in my grill.
Then you could make an ant farm and put them in there.
play.
Yeah, Gambit does little to nothing for me. He has a stick, and I guess that's kind of cool.
He throws cards.
Yeah, which is stupid.
He's that guy that, like, people who have never actually read a comic book but say they like comic books are always like, yeah, my favorite X-Men is Gambit.
Like, shut up. X-Factor Investigations. Yes. That'd be sweet, fucking man. Thousand times the X.
That's an ending.
Yes. With Jamie Madrox and his team solving mysteries. A film noir with X-Men. Fuck yes. Or District M would also be good. District X would also be good. That was a good book. Okay, number six, Dazzler. I'd
yes.
go see it.
Yes.
Anybody would else go. Would.
I think we would, though.
I love Dazzler.
You know, they could use Dazzler.
When I went to the Toronto Comic Con a few years ago with two of my friends who aren't into comics, but they're just cool dudes, so they came with me anyway.
Aww.
And I bought two Dazzler Essentials. And they're like, you bought... And they're looking at it, they're like, what the fuck is this? I'm like, she's pretty cool, guys. They're like, holy
what
fuck.
What does she do? She
she's like a pop singer who
sound.
Also has... mutant power. Shut up. Number five, the Star Jammers.
What?
Star Jammers are actually pretty cool, actually, dude. It's, what's her face? It's the Scott Summers' dad up in space having space adventures.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty fun. And he's kind
of
like, and he's kind
of
like Han Solo.
That sounds even
fun.
More awesome.
You'd like Star Jammers, dude. You should check out the Star Jammers books. Number four, Pete Wisdom, who I had never even heard of, but Paul Cornell wrote a Max miniseries. He's, I guess he's like superpowered James Bond.
Ooh, I'm into that.
That'd be cool, though. I'd see it.
Mm-hmm.
Number 13, Captain Britain and MI-13.
I'd probably watch that, too. Although, I prefer Union Jack.
I mean, I guess it would be cool that they're trying different characters, but I don't imagine anyone would care about Captain Britain. Yeah. X-Men. Wait for it. Modern all-female cast. The Brian Wood book that's had four issues so far. They're like, yeah, totally.
You and I'm all for that, too, and I haven't even read those books.
Honestly, I would like to see a movie that was just about, like, Storm and Rogue and Jubilee
Kitty Pride
and,
is the best.
And Psylocke and who's that? Is that
oh
Rachel
my god,
Gray?
It was like a...
Is Rachel Gray in that book?
Yeah.
I like her, too.
I still want to see a female Expendables movie, so...
And number one they have is Cable.
I think that's, like, they're planning that X-Force movie, and I'm pretty sure Cable's going
to
be a part of it.
You have to be.
Am I the only one who thinks Cable's really boring?
I think you are, because Cable's pretty awesome.
Boring.
Especially if you read Dwayne Straczynski's run, which is one of my favorite runs ever.
Okay, I'll read that.
So
and
do
then
that.
Maybe I'll love him.
Maybe you'll change your mind.
He's got InfoNet, isn't that what it is?
I hope I do.
I know things.
Are you guys ready?
Yeah, sure, man.
So help out, fucker! Help out, fucker! Help out, fucker!
Help! Help!
Help out, fucker!
Heroin noise!
Help!
Heroin noise!
Help!
Heroin noise!
Help! My favorite! Help! You need to help out. You're sitting there helping into your crunch. Doritos are my favorite. That was the worst favorite song ever because did nothing.
Because I can't make the air raid noise with my mouth. And then also when I said
make
air raid
noise,
I actually said aeroid noise. And it thought me made me think of delicious hemorrhoids from the start or whatever it was.
Delicious
hemorrhoids. Flavorful hemorrhoids. So then I laughed
we
in
said
my
they
head.
Were bursting. We didn't say that they were delicious. We made no reference to eating hemorrhoids. Anyway, my favorite.
You just said
if you came for the song, we'll do better next week. Oh, no, we'll do better because Rob won't be here, so you have to step up next week
God.
On the song.
I'll bring my guitar that I bought from Rob, and I'll play In Bloom because that's the only song I can play.
Oh, no.
And I can play it really poorly, too. But I'm
oh,
playing.
Good. Well, as long as you can play it poorly. All right, so despite the disappointing theme song, we're going to do our favorites. And my favorite this week, which, again, will shock you, so hold on to your butts. It was Adventure Time, number 19. I know I picked this book a lot, but it's real good. This is a good
dude,
comic.
I picked Hawkeye like 12 times out of 12, so...
That's a good point. This is my second favorite issue of this book ever. Next, second only maybe to the Choose
Your Own
Adventure Time. Okay, so this is the conclusion of the storyline where Finn and Jake are inside these dungeons, and in the last issue they each ended up in their own private dungeon. Without realizing that they're in dungeons that the Lich has set up. So in this one, Finn looks all different and discovers that everything is all creepy and weird. And it's actually like borderline spooky a little bit. And in order to get out, he has to like sing a love song to the Lich, which makes everyone throw him out. Stop it! This frank display of alleged love burns! It burns! And then they go into the Jake world, where in this world, Finn has stretching powers instead of Jake. and Princess Peebles is evil, and then they end up having to fight this giant stretchy Finn, which is really awesome. By doing so, they have to talk about how awesome he is. But there's this... well, they have to sing a rap song about how much they love things. But the best part, though, is... he smushes Finn, stretchy Finn crushes Peebles, and Finn says, "Ha, smush to see you, Peebles, and thanks for teaching me just now that good-looking peeps can be evil inside. It actually is a valuable life lesson. Too often we judge people by how they look and not how they act or who they are. Dude, obviously that's cool, but we're still fighting a stretchy you." Then the last one, which is what really made this issue work for me, was the Ice King's world, where it's almost like tragic. Like, Dice King's with this girl who was obviously his girlfriend before the world ended, and that he wasn't able to protect, and that's why he wears the crown, which makes him forget stuff all the time, but gives him his powers. And so that's why Ice King isn't really evil. He's just very confused and misunderstood. So it's actually like a really sweet, beautiful, like touching moment in the comic, in addition to being very funny all over the place. But they end up fighting the Lich in the Echo of Lich final boss, which I thought was great. And the way they actually defeat him, with Jake going inside of the Lich boss's head and stretching out huge until it explodes. "Dude, I keep getting body junk dumped on me in this adventure. Just roll with it, buddy." But the best part of the whole issue for me, and I'm going to spoil it because it's fucking brilliant, is they finally get to open up the treasure chest. Like, treasure after all that? Whoa, Jake, are you saying that maybe the true treasure is friendship? Companionship? Ultimate bro times? No, I mean, I'm still big into what's in that chest, but we just destroyed that remnant of the Lich. Shouldn't we, I don't know, take a breather? I mean, is it really appropriate to celebrate right now by opening up some old chest and taking an actual real-life mailman's outfit? I love it! His face is so funny. So, like, yeah, they each got a different thing. Finn gets a new sword. The Ice King gets a really sweet little thing. I'm not going to spoil it because it's too sweet. And then Jake gets an ML man's outfit and he wears it for the rest of the comic, and it is the funniest thing I've ever seen. And then the backup story, which was brilliant, it's a little it's just a little 4 or 5 page comic, or 3 page comic even, but it's ambidextrous. It's called Ambitreacherous. So you read the first 2.5 pages one way, and then you flip the book over and read the last 3 pages from the other direction to see where, because you get both sides of the story, and like it comes together in the middle, and it's fucking brilliant. Like, it ends up being this two-headed creature that's like also gravity all switched around. So like Finn goes to rescue Jake, who he thinks has been kidnapped, but he hasn't actually. And Jake gets called away from a picnic with Princess Rainicorn. It's so cool. Like, just a little 6-pager, and it was amazing. So definitely my favorite comic of the week, and one of my favorite comics, period, all the time. It's so good.
I always like the sounds of that book, but I've never seen the show.
You would, honestly, I like the show. I like the comic better.
Yeah,
you would love this book. You don't need to know anything about the show at all. Okay. And you can get the hardcovers now, the mathematical editions.
Yeah,
that's so math. That's what they always say.
I'm like, what?
That's so math. Oh my glob, you guys! I'm so lumping excited. Anyway, Robbie G, what was your favorite?
Oh, goodness.
Is Hawkeye in it?
Yep.
Yeah, totally.
My favorite issue this week was Wonder Woman issue 23 by Brian Azzarello and Cliff Chang.
I also enjoyed this comic.
I think my favorite Cliff Chang cover of the series.
Interesting.
I really liked it. It was War's beard.
It is pretty awesome.
As Wonder Woman is walking across it, dual-wielding axes.
It did have my favorite panel of this whole series.
It had my favorite page of the series, for sure. This is kind of the final showdown between Wonder Woman, War, and her...
And Firstborn.
Team and the Firstborn, who sends a bunch of crazy hyena warriors after her.
Which was cool.
And my favorite page, I'm pretty sure, of the whole series is War turning around after... Firstborn is taunting him, asking him what kind of army he brought along with him, and then it's a full page, him just saying all of them. Yeah, like, who would
fight
for
you? What soldiers would follow you, old man?
All of them. And then it's a really cool, like, Nordic god picture of him just summoning these enormous forces from all time and space. Just
crusaders and brown coats and samurai.
And just the stance that War has in the center of this that Cliff Chang drew was... a beautiful page, a really, really cool page. The rest of this book is just mayhem, chaos.
But also some good character moments, like Hera. I thought Hera had some cool moments in this issue.
No, I agree. Yeah. It was cool seeing little snaps of Apollo fighting. I really, you're right, actually. Really cool moments with Hera and the mom of the baby. Damn it, I forget her name. I'm sorry. Anyway, the firstborn fights a bunch with Apollo, and then there's a really cool sequence towards the end where War basically sacrifices himself, and Wonder Woman then takes up the mantle of the God of War.
Yeah. And I also like that Hades came back in this issue.
He shows up at the very end, just like immediately taking, telling Wonder Woman that he has to bring War down to hell with him.
And there's that great moment at the end of the issue where What's Her Face hits the first one with the wood.
Yeah.
I cannot be stopped, bonk, asshole.
That was
cute. But yeah, and the last page is gorgeous too, of Wonder Woman and War in the boat.
That was a very, very beautiful page as they're being shipped away into Hades.
They're shipping up to Boston.
Shipping out to Hades. Yeah, this may have been my favorite installment of Wonder Woman since the reboot. Me too, actually.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited to see what's going to happen next.
I love this. This was,
I'm really interested.
It's very cool the way that Azzarello has been pacing this whole series, because he hasn't been pacing it in arcs. He's just been building.
Yeah, it's been like one big long thing.
Huge blowout with the firstborn when Wonder Woman finally gets this child back. And also his depiction of Wonder Woman in this book, I love so much more than I love all the other versions or incarnations of her throughout the New 52 right now.
Yeah.
She's
not defined by her boyfriend.
She's okay. Yeah.
Because so far she's just a prop for Superman to make out with.
Yeah, I know, it sucks. So it's very cool seeing her as this amazing warrior in this book, and also be a really compelling character, a really deep and layered character. And I don't know, this is just such a bold choice to put a guy like Azzarello on a book like this, and I've said it 1,000 times, and I think he really, really hit it big with this one. I was really glad to see it. And I'm going to get the villain months of the Firstborn, and I might get the Cheetah issue next month, but I don't know who's doing it. I know Azzarello and Cliff Chang have nothing to do with it. I know that Azzarello is at least writing the Firstborn issue, so
I'm not getting any of them.
I loved this issue. I love that this is the culmination of the past 2 years of Wonder Woman. Not even necessarily the culmination, because again, there's no really distinct ending cutoff.
It doesn't feel like it's done.
Yeah. It opens it up into a whole, I mean, she's now
two.
The God of War. So it's now opening it up into this brand new branch of storytelling that I think Brian Azzarello will really, really...
I like that. Yeah, it changes the character status quo, but it actually earns it, unlike what the New 52 did, which was change everyone's status quo without earning any of it.
Yeah, definitely. It builds to a point, boils to a point, and...
it was story-driven.
Yeah. Wonder Woman has been so story-driven. I love it. It's a great series. I'm glad that I'm still on board with this. I'm glad that Cliff Chang actually drew the whole thing, too. Not that I dislike Tony Akins or Garam Tsutsouka, who have been kind of doing the fill-in books, but Cliff Chang's...
Cliff's book.
Yeah.
A great pick, and one that I like a lot.
Moving.
If I read it, I would like it.
You'd dig it.
Ryan Heff, what is your favorite?
My favorite of the three books I read this week is... This is another book that is kind of like Hawkeye, where it seems like I pick it a lot, because I do, because it's just so
it's
fucking
book.
Excellent. Daredevil, issue 30, from Mark Waid and Chris Samnee. And Javier Rodriguez on colors, I gotta mention that, especially in this issue.
Yeah.
Because this is Daredevil teaming up with the Silver Surfer.
Norrin Rad.
Oh, man, it's so just sweet. It's like a cool, it's kind of like
it's
a one-shot
shot
story.
It's so one-shot, I loved it.
Yeah. At the start, we get the reveal from the last issue of who is in Murdoch's office, and it's Karen McDuffie kind of tearing the place up like only she's want to do. That I don't know. And then Matt is visited by a strange alien that he can't really make sense of. And he kind of gets filled in on this kind of sob story about how this guy wants to save the whole universe and basically blah, 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 and Matt Murdock's going to take him to the Avengers. And then, dramatically, the Silver Surfer enters the picture in the best panel that Sammy's ever drawn.
Really?
So
my
many.
Favorite panel?
I mean, well, it's
I mean, it's a good one.
It's hyperbole, but there's
my
Kirby
favorite,
dots, man. There's Kirby
it's
dots.
It's pretty awesome. My favorite panel in this issue, though, was I'll Drive.
Yeah.
I like that one, too.
Yeah.
One rule, I'll Drive.
Oh.
That's all I have to say about this book. It's amazing, and I'll Drive.
And it's a one-shot.
Oh, so cool.
And in every Marvel team-up ever, at first they fight. And it's cool with, like, this this one panel here with Daredevil punching Silver.
But it wasn't like three issues where they fight, and then the last issue they suddenly go, "Oh, we're not actually on this. Yeah. We're on the same team.
We're good guys, right?"
That's why it wasn't annoying when the characters fought in like the Marvel Age, because they'd fight for a couple pages and then there'd still be a story.
Let's say there's two pages of fighting between Daredevil.
Yeah, instead of 12 issues,
which is all.
It wasn't called Avengers vs. X-Men.
Yeah,
I'm being catty.
Silver Surfer kind of fills Daredevil in on this strange alien, and basically. He's evil, and what he does is I don't know. Anyways, but Silver Surfer's trying to track him down, and he can't really find him because he only sees the souls of people. So Silver Surfer asks Daredevil to take him to this alien, and then Daredevil
he's
says,
like James
okay,
Brown.
But then he goes, I'll drive. And we I'll have, drive. Like, this awesome, like, mostly
so
full-page spread. And Daredevil surfing on the surfboard like sideways while Silver Surfer just stands at the back cross arm.
I know it's been like
impressed.
2+ years now, but isn't it such a fun novelty to have Daredevil be fun?
Mm-hmm.
Like, wow, nobody wants to open up a vein after reading a Daredevil comic anymore.
I mean, and it's been pretty dark. Like,
but always still
answer,
like
but
fun.
It's very hopeful.
Yeah,
and
yeah
fun.
Like there's moments of drama, but it's always like Daredevil's gonna.
Here's 3 pages of him surfing the Silver Surfer surfboard.
You know, and I loved those open up a vein Daredevil comics. I loved them, but I love this too.
This is just so cool. Anyways, like most Marvel books, they defeat the bad guy.
Oh, good. It was a cool bad guy, though.
It was like this
an original villain in this day and age.
Who, I don't know. Silver Surfer punches him with a fazam. Anyways, but then at the very end, we get the ever resilient downer dead. Or the downer Daredevil moment that seems to end the book.
I didn't
a lot.
Know it was necessarily a downer so much as it was just kind of it was. Like
I was
a poignant
so sad.
Kind of moment, but I think it was a downer.
Yeah, it didn't bum me out. It made sense. It was kind of solemn, but it wasn't like
it wasn't
depressing.
Like it wasn't like Foggy being like I have cancer.
No,
that was like oh, it's a heartbreaker. This one was more just like yeah. Oh well,
but
you're still a superhero.
Like, oh, yeah.
You'll fuck somebody else.
You're still a superhero, and you're probably just shredded. Just walk with no shirt on.
All right,
that's
now
a
we
good,
know what Ryan's
good
looking forward to here on the comic.
I kind of want to
cut
the episode right in.
Well, we should have just hit the end there, but
yeah,
good pick, buddy. One
that
I like
a
lot
is a hell of a book, and then also the fact that we get a Jester story next.
That's gonna be fun.
Yay!
Be so cool.
Well,
I love that cover. The next cover.
So that was yet another kind of a light week, boys. Next week will probably be even lighter because Rob will be gone. It'll just be me and Ryan.
Oh God,
we'll find some things to talk about. That'll be fun. Rob's going on vacation.
You want?
Yeah, we'll just talk about wrestling the whole time.
I didn't know you were going on vacation.
It's going to Vancouver.
Yeah. Oh,
well,
nice.
Until next week, y'all. Thanks for joining us, and I will see you next week. I'm Joey G.
I'm Robbie G. Peace be with you.
I'm Ryan Nipples.
Ryan Nipples. And and that's all. That's the end of our show. That's a Homestar Runner thing, I think, isn't it?
Yeah. Or Brack or something.
No, I'm pretty sure it's Homestar Runner.
Oh, I gotta go to sleep.
I just started thinking of Muppets. So I went.
Good night, everybody.
I love you.
I love you.
Love you too.